Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Barry Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the American public's trust, that is your trust and mine, in our government, is at an all-time low. Probably that is no surprise to you at all. However, what may be shocking is the magnitude of just how untrustworthy our government and governmental officers are in the eyes of the citizens they're supposed to be representing. Analyzing data that was collected from 1958 in a study called the American National Election Study, all the way up to 2015, Pew Research has submitted the following findings. Only 19% of Americans today say they can trust their government in Washington, D.C. to do what is right all the time or most of the time. Now, the breakdown is as follows. 3% say they can trust their government to do what's right all the time, while 16% say they can trust their government to do what's right even most of the time. And that's going to be our discussion today, the tragic loss of trust, but more importantly, what we, and I'm talking about what you, what I, what we can do to restore that trust. And with that, I welcome you to the program today. I am Dave Kistler. I'm joined today by Sam Rohrer. Gary is still away. He has been on the continent of Africa, has a lot to share when he joins us back in front of his microphone. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to go to this important topic because this literally will impact the future of the country if this distrust factor continues to decline. Fewer than 3 in 10 Americans have expressed trust in the federal government in every major national poll conducted since July of 2007. And by the way, that's the longest period of low distrust in government in more than 50 years. However, in 1958, when the American National Election Study first asked the question about trusting government, 73% said they could trust their government always or most of the time. The erosion of public trust in government appears to have begun in earnest in the 60s. The share saying they could trust the federal government to do the right thing nearly always or most of the time reached an all-time high of 77% in 1964. Now, let me reiterate that. 77% of the American public said they could trust their government to do what was right all the time or most of the time. That zenith was attained in 1964. However, within a decade, a period that included the Vietnam War, a lot of civil unrest in the United States, and the Watergate scandal, trust had fallen by more than half to 36%. And by the end of the 70s, only 25% of Americans felt they could trust their government at least most of the time. Well, trust in government rebounded, according to the Pew Research study, in the 1980s before falling in the mid-1990s. But as the economy boomed in the late 1990s, confidence in government once again increased. And in 2001, the 9/11 terror attacks hit the United States and public attitudes on a range of issues, including trust in government, began to be greatly affected. In early October of 2001, a month after the 9/11 attacks, 60% of the American public said we could trust our government, roughly double the share earlier that year, and the highest percentage expressing trust in government in more than 40 years. But that brief uptick in government trust was very short-lived because by the summer of 2002, the share of people saying they could trust their government had tumbled 22 percentage points from 60% to 38%. And then with the war in Iraq and economic uncertainty at home, trust in government has continued to decline to where now today it is at 19% who say they can trust their government to do what's right all the time or even most of the time. Now, Sam, I want to ask you a question because there appears to be from this study a direct correspondence between confidence in government and three things. And what I mean by that is this. Number one, who is in leadership? If someone of perceived character is occupying the role of leader, i.e. the White House, there appears to be an uptick in trust in government. For example, there was an uptick in the 80s, and of course we know Ronald Reagan was the president at that time. The second thing that seems to indicate or affect trust is how the economy is doing. For example, in the late 90s, the Clinton economy was doing well, so there was an uptick in trust in government. So it appears that how the economy is doing affects whether or not the American people trust government or not. And then the third thing that seems to affect trust, at least from my perspective, is whether or not we are in a time of national crisis. For example, in early 2001, right after the 9/11 attacks, we were unified as a nation because we were under what we believed was an attack by a common enemy from the outside, terrorism. And so there tended to be at least what appeared to be briefly an uptick in confidence in government. Am I oversimplifying that, Sam, or do those three things seem in your mind as well to affect the American people's trust in their government?
Well, Dave, you've laid a lot of information on our listeners here this morning, but I believe that as you look back through time with this Pew report indicating, there is a direct connection with who is in office. We know that. That's objectively measurable. You can be frightened by some who are in government. You can be encouraged. Their personality makes a big difference. Just like you talked about Reagan during a time, he just delivered a message to the American people that just was a significant thing. So that's not hard to believe. How the economy goes? Well, I can tell you that when you run for office, if the economy is good, you've got a better chance of being elected if you are, in fact, a proponent for those things that relate to why economy is good. If you're the fault of a bad economy, don't expect to get reelected. That does always show up. And crisis is a time that binds our people together, either on one side or perhaps another. And that's what you cited with 9/11. So, Dave, I think these things are and they do walk together. Now, I think as we get into it, they may not be the all underlying reasons why people's attitude is more optimistic and trust is higher or less. I think there are other things that factor into it, but those are big bars on the chart, you could say that way. They're the big measurable things that often coincide. So, yeah, those are applicable, and they're applicable even to where we are today.
Well, Sam, this is what I found interesting about this Pew Research study. By the way, it was released in 2015, but because of what's going on in Washington, D.C. with all the sexual allegations, and we may hit a new low with respect to trust in government officials. But the 2015 study, Sam, had some real interesting components to it. For example, young people are somewhat more likely than older adults to say they trust the federal government. Now, while 19% of the general populace trusted government, 27% of adults younger than 30 said they trusted government at least most of the time to do the right thing, compared to 19% of those between 30 and 49 and only 15% of those who trusted government who were over 50. Does this indicate anything at all, Sam, in your mind?
Well, it may indicate that the younger folks have not lived as long as the older folks, and they have not seen perhaps as much. Ha! We could go a little deeper on that, Dave.
Well, we may do that in the next segment, but I will tell you where we are going to go, ladies and gentlemen, is to discuss the ramifications of our, I'm talking about yours and mine, our lack of trust in the governmental framework we've been given, and how all the emerging sexual allegations that are rocking Washington, D.C. currently, how does all of that factor in? And then as we get into segment three, what can we do to restore trust in government? All that coming up.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung in Jerusalem, Israel. You often hear me on Stand in the Gap Today with Sam, Dave, and Gary. Guess what? We're all coming to Israel. Love to have you come and go with us. The dates are March the 7th through the 21st. That will include 10 days in Israel, 4 days in Petra, one of the most unique cities in all the world. If you need more information, the itinerary, the exact dates, also the information about cost, call this number, 423-825-6247. That's 423-825-6247. Ask for Jody. She can give you all the information as Stand in the Gap Today and Prophecy Today go host a tour to Israel. Next year in Jerusalem, we're looking forward to you being here with us.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr.
Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Dave Kistler along with Sam Rohr, and we're discussing as our topic today the tragic loss of trust in government, governmental officials, in the United States of America. And just to refresh your memory, or to let you know if you were not listening to the final segment, or the last segment rather, that now trust in government is hovering somewhere in the 19% range of the American people have trust that government will do what is right all the time or even most of the time in the United States of America. And of course, this is from a 2015 Pew Research study that provides these numbers. Sam, there was a very interesting New York Times op-ed piece dated July 3rd, 2015, where columnist Lynn Vavrick stated the following. And I want to read just a portion of her analysis and comments with respect to the declining trust on the part of the American people in government. She said, and I quote, "It's easy to look at Washington and conclude that nothing ever gets done. Trust in government has steadily deteriorated over the past several decades and continues to do so. Questioning the aims and efforts of government is a foundation of American citizenship. It's how this nation was born. The colonists didn't trust King George III, and they carefully laid out their reasons for breaking away from his rule in the Declaration of Independence. Confidence in government to do the right thing is central to elections and accountability. Many people, for example, agree on what government should accomplish, like peace, security, and economic growth, but they disagree on the steps to get there, like cutting taxes, enacting the draft, or increasing airport security. Mainly, people disagree over means while still agreeing that the goal is desirable, and then those disagreements are at the heart of much of partisan politics," end quote. Now, Sam, I want to go back. She's pointing out the lack of trust on the part of the American people, which is the point we're making. It is stunning how few people trust their government. But she makes this statement in her first paragraph. She said, "Questioning the aims and efforts of government is a foundation of American citizenship. It's how the nation was born." Now, I want to just ask you up front, is that a true statement?
Dave, it is true, but I think we need to clarify something here. Questioning from the standpoint of citizens questioning what government is doing, meaning their policies, the aims, their goals, what they are doing with our tax dollars, as an example, how they are being involved in relationships with countries overseas, that kind of thing. That is exactly what citizens have to do. But that's different than not trusting those who are in government. I can trust somebody. If I trust somebody, I can disagree, Dave, with them on the decision perhaps they may make when it comes to a policy. Back at the founding of our countries, there were healthy debates over the role of the federal government, the Federalist Papers, all of these things we refer back to. These were heavy discussions. But it's not that the people didn't trust the people, and it's not even that those who disagreed were not trustworthy themselves. They just held to different opinions, perhaps, based on certain factors. But the fact that those factors were a matter of discussions, the why we differ in our approach, why those were matters of discussions. In a climate of trust produces a good result. But in a climate of distrust, it's kind of like sitting across the table from somebody, like we had in the program last week with Israel, sitting down at the table and negotiating with Hamas and the Palestinians, who are telling these people, Israel, are to be killed. If you're sitting down at the table and you're the person you're bargaining with or negotiating with, you know they want you dead at the first moment. That's really the bottom of the trust level ladder. They want you dead. You can't have a discussion. You will not come to any kind of a satisfactory conclusion on anything. So I suggest, Dave, that there's a stark difference between questioning the policies of those in government and distrusting those in government.
Sam, let me go here, because I think the point you're bringing up is an outstanding one. I've bought an automobile numbers of times down through the last 32 years that I've been in the ministry, and I've bought automobiles at times from people that I didn't know if I could trust them or not. I'm talking about the car salesman, maybe the dealership, but I needed a vehicle. I needed that kind of vehicle. They were the only one that had it. And so I purchased a vehicle from someone I was not 100% convinced I could trust them. And then I've purchased vehicles at other times from people that I was firmly convinced cared about me, really wanted to help me in the ministry that God has given us because of maybe their personal commitment to Christ or whatever. It's a different thing when you can trust the individual representing the institution. The institution is government itself. And I think what you're saying is, if we have questions about the people that are serving in the institution, their credibility, and we don't trust them, then we've got a significant problem. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Again, because the outcome is totally, totally different. We're in a republic, Dave, and that's different. If we believe in self-government, which is really where we are, that means the citizens themselves have the authority, and we therefore must take very, very involved discussion and be a part of the process. Those who go to Washington or on local levels of government are there as our representatives. They should represent us. But if, in fact, they do not, then we should recall them. If they are not doing what we want, then we should not have them there. It's a surprising thing in some respects, Dave, that over these many, 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 many years, all the way back into the last century, where the trust factor has been so low, theoretically, Dave, that ought to translate into the fact that these people aren't sent back to office. You know, how can people, if the numbers are true, how can they actually be sending back people who they don't trust? And this is one of the things I think that I've found out. Generally speaking, in a larger sense, these kinds of surveys would say that government generally we do not trust. But when it comes down to actually pulling the lever for the guy down the road, they say, well, my congressman's different or my senator's different, even though they're a part of the pot. There's been a disconnect, I believe, in what people say and their level of involvement with the actual persons for which they actually pull the lever. And also say one other thing. This report was on federal government. Most reports I've seen in the past would indicate that as people get closer to themselves, local government, they tend to trust those who are closer more than they trust those who are afar off in Washington. So there's just some other factors in there that we have to consider as well.
Well, I think, Sam, that's what our founders intended. They wanted government to be as local and as close to the people as it could possibly be, not this overarching, powerful federal entity called the federal government, because of the very thing that we're talking about. The further these elected officials get away from the people, the more they feel independent of them, and the less the people that are being represented by these folks trust them. One of the other things, Sam, that Vavrick said in her piece in the New York Times in 2015. She made this statement. I want to just ask you about it. She said, quote, confidence in the government to do the right thing is central to elections and accountability. I don't think either one of us would disagree with that. But then she goes on and says this: many people agree on what government should accomplish, like peace, security, economic growth. Now, I want to ask you a question, Sam. Do people in America today agree on what government is supposed to be accomplishing? And is peace, security, and economic growth, is that part of what our Constitution says our government is supposed to do? And the point I'm getting to is this: can we really trust an institution, i.e. government, if we don't know what that institution we're being asked to trust is actually supposed to be doing?
No, absolutely. And that goes right to the very heart of it. I don't agree with what she says, that most people, as an example, can even tell you, Dave, what the purpose of government is. They will tell you, all right, if I'm hungry and starving, I'm hungry and starving because it must be government's fault. If I'm in debt and I don't have two nickels rubbed together, that's probably government's fault. We tend to push off to government many times those things which ought to be our own duties. And in this new age of big government, where ultimately government has intended to really striven to be God himself and to do the things that only God can do, that produces a real level of disconnect. And it all comes back to then, our government, what is it exactly that you are supposed to do? What does the Constitution say? I don't think the average person couldn't tell you what the Constitution says. The average person couldn't tell you what God says. The average person couldn't tell you what even the guys in office believe their jobs are to be. So it does get down to that. If you don't know the expectation, you will be forever disappointed. And I think that's where we've got to start. Start at the bottom. What are you supposed to be doing, government?
Let me do this. Let me ask you this, because we've got to go into the break. But what biblically, what according to Romans 13, is government supposed to do?
It's very simple, to enact justice. If I were to put two words together, that would be it. Enact justice. Romans and Peter talk about praising those who do well, encouraging good actions according to the law, and punishing those who violate the law, God's moral law, ultimately as inscripted in civil law. Those are the two things. And with that comes protection of the people, military, and so forth. But it's enacting justice, Dave. That's where it is. Not much more than that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard the best definition of what government is to do that you'll ever hear. It's to praise good, punish evil. The process of doing both of those will enact justice in any country. And when we come back from this very brief timeout, we're going to discuss one of the most important things we've ever discussed on this program, and that is how can we, not the government, but how can we restore trust in the institution of government itself?
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, if you read the multiplicity of articles available on restoring trust in government or some kindred title, you'll find a variety of answers. Everything from greater transparency. We need greater transparency. If there's greater transparency in government, that will increase trust on the part of the American people. From that to greater accountability. You'll hear people say, we just need greater accountability. That will cause the trust of the American people to go up. But the question I have, ladies and gentlemen, is this. Is there a deeper and more substantive answer than that? James Madison, often called the founder of the Constitution, believed that he and his generation of American founders had discovered the way to rescue popular government from its past failures, but that its ultimate success depended on the great experiment in self-government entrusted to the hands of future generations. The destiny of Republican government, Madison believed, is staked on the vigilance of the American people to tend what Madison called the sacred fire of liberty. Said Madison, and I quote, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it. We have staked the future of our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God." Now, Sam, this is the place I've really been wanting to go the entire program, but to get here, we had to talk about the great distrust that now is in place in America with respect to our government. But Madison believed that government success was based on the citizens' ability to govern themselves, but to govern themselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. So he brought God into the picture. My question to you is this. What role then should God, his opinions found in his word, what role should that play in the restoration of trust in our governmental institutions?
Well, Dave, the position of God in any level of trust, in any level of a just government, or in any level of the concept of justice being administered by government, or in any capacity of that government being transparent and not covering, or in any aspect of those in government to understand that, for instance, the money that's taken in the form of taxes don't belong to government, but it's property that belongs to the people. Dave, any of these kinds of things, some of which I just mentioned there, most people would say, well, yeah, I expect government to be careful with what they take out of my pocket. And yes, I do want a governmental leader not to be covering up their actions. And if they break the law, they need to be held accountable, just like anybody else is held accountable. All of those things, Dave, they revolve around the understanding of justice, which has as its root God and truth. So into this discussion is that without a common recognition of truth, you cannot have trust. And you cannot come to a common definition of truth if you do not believe that there is a truth giver, that is God himself. So if you throw out God, you therefore throw out truth. And if you throw out truth, you throw out, therefore, the basis for justice, and you throw out trust, because without justice, you can't have trust, and you actually destroy the very fiber and the fabric of everything that hinges on that, and that is the way a family works, the way local society works, the way government works. These are linchpins that if you take out one and you take out them all, Dave, it will collapse. And that's the whole point I think we're talking about here, is that when you have such a low level of trust, you are in a position of transition. You are not in a position of permanency, meaning you are either doing something to improve the level of trust or you are actually continuing to slide, but it's not a static position, and you cannot survive as a nation when, in fact, such a low number of people actually have trust in those who are affecting their lives every day through the decisions that they're making.
Sam, two things I want to mention. One is a statement, the other is a question. I cannot help but wonder, with all of the sexual impropriety that is rocking Washington, D.C. right now, the allegations of harassment, assault, I cannot help but wonder, had there been for the last 50 years posted somewhere in the halls of Congress, maybe at the back of the House chamber, the back of the Senate chamber, the Ten Commandments of God, one of which says, thou shalt not commit adultery. I cannot help but wonder if our elected officials had not had to see that, face that every day, would it have had an effect on the lifestyle choices of our elected officials, and thereby the trust we have in them, or lack thereof? I can't help but think that the Ten Commandments would have made a vast difference. The other thing, Sam, and you're welcome to comment on that after I ask this question, but the zenith of trust on the part of the American people, as long as there has been surveys of it, was in 1964, when 77% of the American people said they trusted their government to do what was right either all the time or most of the time. 1964, 77%. Sam, you know this as well as I do. 1962, the Bible and its influence, prayer, was removed from our public school system and basically from the American psyche. We have been on a downhill run ever since as far as trust in our government, and certainly in our governmental officials. Is that observation I just made, the lack of trust that has continued to increase since 1964, knowing the Bible and prayer was removed in 1962, is that coincidental, or is there a cause-effect relationship?
No, Dave, I believe there is a cause and effect relationship, and there were a number of things that happened around that whole point that manifested itself ultimately in the fact that the prayer was removed and the Ten Commandments were removed from our public school. But we have to bear in mind that those two major decisions, and then followed not much later in 73 with the fact that we're going to legalize the murder of the unborn, there were a lot of things that began happened within a short period of time. But Dave, they did not just come up out of nowhere. They came as a result of a changing mentality, a changing world view of our people. And that came out of the whole discussion even about evolution and God no longer as creator, and that we are basically little gods ourselves. There was a throwing out of God that preceded, I believe, that event that manifested itself with the Ten Commandments and prayer. But again, it's back to the thing we talked about. It's back to the cornerstone of what role does God have? If we throw him out as creator, as judge, as the ultimate, basically the enforcer of the law and justice, the one who has alone the right to establish what is morally correct and morally wrong, if we throw that out, Dave, there is no standard. And of course, that standard leads to the fact that there's no predictability. You have no confidence if you don't have a standard. We threw out the standard that resulted in throwing out prayer to the standard maker, God, throwing out prayer to the standard maker, God, and throwing out that standard maker, God, the rules for engagement within a society being the Ten Commandments. It all went together as a package. We are reaping the results of those seeds that were sown long ago. And that happens to follow along with this level of distrust, because how can you trust something of which you have no confidence?
Sam, let me ask you this. I'm going to give you a microphone. I'm going to put you in front of the 535 members of Congress, and I'm going to let you say to them the top three things that must be done in order for the American people to once again trust the government itself and those people, the 535 that represent us on the national level in Washington, D.C. If you could speak to them and say, look, if you're going to be trusted again as legislators, three things have got to happen. What would be those three things?
Well, Dave, trust is never going to happen unless those individuals in office again stand up publicly and say, we believe in God and we adopt his moral standards. If they don't do that, they're not going to have any change in their life, number one. Number two, there has to be an agreement by that body and by those in office to actually expose those who have committed crimes worthy of punishment and actions worthy of justice being administered. So they have to clean up their house and themselves. And then thirdly, they really, Dave, I think they have to commit to, at that point going forward, with a very strong commitment to being consistent in what they are saying. In other words, don't be afraid of saying, if they're a Christian, don't be afraid of saying, I'm a Christian. And what that means is that I have to live according to certain things. Say what you are and do not be ashamed of saying, I trust in God and he has a set of laws. And if we follow them, we will obey. Dave, we can't run away from those things. That's what we've been doing for a couple of generations. And obviously, when you run away from the light, you end up running into the dark.
Sam, outstanding. Thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, you heard a three-part prescription. We're going to follow up on that in the final segment. We call it our solution segment. We're going to talk about those three things that Sam just stated and how they should and can apply to the plethora of accusations that are coming against our leaders currently, sexual allegations and otherwise, as we tie together this discussion, the tragic losses of trust. But how can it be restored? Because, ladies and gentlemen, I believe it can be. In fact, it must be if our country is not only going to survive, if our country is going to thrive. Stay with us after the time.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in his works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our topic today is the tragic loss of trust. And we've given you the numbers. We've talked about how we got here and the decline over the last 50 years plus. But what we want to get to is not just a discussion of where we are. I think we all understand we're at a place that is unlike any place we've been in the history of our country as far as lack of trust in the institution of government, as well as those that serve in that institution. But the most important thing is, how do we retrieve or restore trust in not just the government itself, but those that represent us in that very sacred institution? I think everything that's going on in Washington, D.C. could be tied back to a violation of one or several of the Ten Commandments. For example, we say many times on this program that you will view as your God either government or God himself. And government was never intended to be a deity. It was never intended to provide everything for us. God is the one that does that. And so the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt have no other gods before me, including government. I'm going to put that in as well. We could also talk about thou shalt not steal. With all that is going on, the rampant thievery, whether it's governmental thievery or it's thievery on the part of individual legislators, all of that is a violation of that commandment. But I want to focus in on what is the gaining and garnering the attention of the American people currently, and that are these incredibly salacious allegations sexually that are coming out against our elected officials. And I'm not just talking about allegations. I'm talking about proven conduct where the person accused has admitted, yes, I did this. I touched inappropriately. I groped or I assaulted a woman or I did this or that or the other thing. We're talking about admitted acts on the part of people that are serving in Washington, D.C., and how that is a violation of thou shalt not commit adultery. Sam, you gave three key areas. I asked the top three things that must be done for a restoration of trust, and you mentioned those three. I want you to take those three and mention them again, but do so in the context of what we're watching in D.C. right now, and that's all of this sexual impropriety. Apply those three things directly to that one topic, if you would.
Well, Dave, that's a big order to try and do here, but I'll go this direction here first. Number one, I said, if it's going to change in Washington and trust is going to be restored, and I'm going to take it beyond Washington, just take it to our homes, fathers, mothers, husbands, wives, wherever it may be. Because the trust factor is all a matter of what relationship. We're magnifying and focusing on the national because of the impact on our lives that these individuals give. But nonetheless, I said, they need to stand up and identify, look in the mirror and ask the question to themselves, who is my God and what are his requirements? So publicly, they ought to stand up and say, all right, this is who my God is, because ultimately they have one. So if it's God of the Bible, that's a whole lot different than if it is Allah as God, or as there is no God, an atheist, or as the God is government, the humanist. It makes all the difference in the world. So they got to look in the mirror and be honest with themselves and say, who's my God, number one. And then where is his body of expectations? Now, for the God of the Bible, our founders would say they took you right to the Bible, and they went specifically to the Ten Commandments because they were the basis for the administration of law and justice. And those were the items, those were the key items that God laid out that said, you better observe these things. If you observe these things, you can have an orderly society. And if you don't, you're going to collapse. So that starts with who God is, and that goes all the way down to not killing. not stealing, not coveting, not lying, not committing adultery, sexual fornication related things. All of those items that Dave, that you listed earlier, they're the reasons why we don't have trust in government officials today, because they violated one or more of those things. So identify who God is, what his law is, and then they have to themselves say, right, if I have violated any of these things, then they ought to have a matter of character to stand up and say, all right, I have violated these things. That would be a violation. We got to go to the matter of civil law, because our civil law does require certain things. And then they need to, within their own ranks, say, we got to clean up our own house. Justice must be applied if you've broken civil law that's on the books, whether you are in the street or whether you're in the seat of Congress. No difference. All. It must apply to all. That's what justice is about. And then thirdly, then it's a matter of they've got to commit to being consistent and measurable against these levels of expectations. That way the people know what the measurement is. They themselves know what the measurement is. And they go from there. Now, theoretically, Dave, the constitutional oath should provide that. I do solemnly swear to uphold and protect the Constitution of the United States, built on these biblical principles. That's not in there, but that's what they are. And they walk through and they say, then, so help me God, acknowledging that the God of the Bible. Now, we know that there are individuals in Congress who would not put their hand on the Bible. The Muslim members, the Keith Ellisons of the world and others, they wouldn't put their hand on the Bible. And they wouldn't swear to God because they have a different God. And for them, lying and so forth is completely legitimate. So that's why I'm saying you got to choose who God you are. Don't be afraid to stand up and identify with it. Apply it to yourself. Apply it to your body. And justice, apply it equally to all, whether they be in the streets or they be in the hallowed seats of Congress.
Sam, what you just shared, I think, is one of the most powerful things I've ever heard with respect to restoring trust. And it was the great evangelist Dwight Moody many years ago that said this: he only is safe outside the sight of a policeman who carries his policeman with him. And he said that policeman is called character. But of course, to Moody, because he was a preacher of the gospel and a preacher of the word of God, it was a character established upon God's law, God's truth. And that's what you've laid out. And friends, this is the key. We cannot have trust on the part of our elected officials, those representing us. We cannot have trust in this wonderful institution of government if we remove God, if we remove God's word, God's expectation, as Sam so clearly said it, and then a commitment to live according to that expectation. If these three things are not there, then friends, there is no way possible to have trust once again restored in the United States of America. Sam, I want to go a little off topic before I ask you to pray, because this came up again today on another talk show, and I thought it was very, very interesting. The topic was trust in restoring it. Is there any validity to the fact that if we could implement term limits for those representing us in Congress, they wouldn't have enough time to get entrenched in their good old boy club, entrenched in their perverse ways? If they could only serve two terms, one term, whatever, would that help restore some trust, just that in and of itself?
Without the changes that I laid out, no. You either have crooks for 2 years or crooks for 6 years.
I agree, Sam.
I mean, in reality, a good man is a good man for life. A man of character is a good man of character for life. I don't mind having a good man around for a long time.
Take us to the throne in prayer, Sam.
Heavenly Father, we are thankful to you for this opportunity today. Focus on these things of great importance. We magnify your name. We come to you and admit that, Lord, you are God, that your law is what's correct, and when we obey it, you bless it. And that's what I pray for those in positions of authority across America today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. Between now and tomorrow, 23 hours from now, stand up for the God that you love. Don't be ashamed to admit he is your God, and acknowledge his truth and order your life accordingly in the days ahead. People will trust you, and if we live that way, trust can ultimately be restored in our nation.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.